Double L. I thank you all very much. I turn the program back over to numero uno. And listen, if this doctor holding on the phone here is worth his salt, maybe the next time I talk to you, yours truly won't be consumed with hatred.
And rage.
That too. Have a happy, won't you?
This is your listener-supported station for the information you need and the music you enjoy.
Heard midnight pealing from a church behind me.
Hello, everybody. Here's the ghostly voice of your New York correspondent coming to you again out of nowhere through the modern magic of a tape recorder. Whenever Mars is near the position which the astronomer calls opposition, the planet is usually so brilliant and so unmistakably ruddy or red in color that it attracts the attention even of people who know nothing at all about astronomy. In these modern days, when rocket travel to the other planet seems to be just around the corner, the sight of Mars at such times, well, it arouses a feeling of genuine excitement, giving the imagination free play to picture those creatures whom we refer to as Martians, and stirring dreams of someday going to Mars to see for ourselves what life may be like there. To the space travel enthusiast, Mars holds the greatest fascination of all outer objects. The moon will be visited first, of course, but the astronomers have told us quite definitely that the moon is an absolutely dead world and of interest to the average space tourist only because its scarred and rugged surface is so dramatically different from the surface of our Earth. But the astronomer will make no such statement about Mars. There, the possibilities of exciting discoveries are almost boundless. There's no denial of the possibility of some form of life, and there are so many fascinating questions that can be answered only by an actual space traveler. What about those famous canals? Are they really great ditches dug by super-intelligent engineering geniuses? Or are they simply crevasses or gullies in the surface of Mars? Or, on the other hand, are they figments of the imagination, merely illusions caused by the inadequacies of our equipment for seeing them? And what about those green areas that seem to spread and grow richer as the polar ice cap melts? Is that vegetation of some kind, as so many astronomers believe? These are the most interesting of the many things that we do not know about Mars. And yet, on the other hand, there are many equally interesting things that we do know. First of all, let us get a clear idea of the meaning of that position of Mars which the astronomer calls opposition. We can think of Mars and the Earth as running a race around the Sun. The judges are in the center of the Sun, watching this and timing us. We can't race for two reasons. First of all, the Earth is a much faster runner than Mars. Both objects sometimes slow down a little and then they speed up. But on the average, the Earth speeds about 18.5 miles a second, whereas the speed of Mars is only about 15 miles a second when we average his whole circuit around the Sun. And so Mars is a slower runner. And then secondly, he's on the outside track, so he has to run a much greater distance around the Sun than the Earth does. Now suppose the judges started the race on September 10, 1956. Look at the diagram and locate the Earth's position for September 10, and you'll see it marked Opposition September 10, 1956. At that time, the judges in the center of the Sun see us lined up. We're in a straight line as they look out at us. That means that we on the Earth see Mars on the outside track, and the judges in the Sun are exactly the opposite side of us. And because they are opposite, astronomers call that situation an opposition.
Martians possessed such mechanical intelligence that they were able to overcome the problem of gravity. The war with the Martians has begun, I said. Come on, let's get out of here.
Imagine the crack of the pistol and the Earth and Mars are off on the race. As conditions are so unequal for the two runners, this has to be a sort of handicap race. The object is not to see which one can go around the track once in the shortest time, because we know that. The object is to see how long it takes the faster Earth to catch up again with Mars. So at the crack of the pistol, the Earth starts to leave Mars behind. For a long time, Mars is behind us. We continue speeding. And after a long time, when we look for Mars, we see him on the far side of the track with the sun in a direct line between us. The astronomer calls that situation conjunction.
Decided to try communicating with the Martians.
Yeah. A word which means joined together, because the Sun and Mars seem joined together in a straight line.
Planet Mars has been in the news lately, having just made its closest approach to the Earth in 17 years. You'll find Mars in the eastern sky near Pisces, much brighter than any nearby star. Its ice-capped south pole now faces us, looking like a white button on a rust-colored globe. If there were Martians, they would be enjoying summer in the southern hemisphere, a summer that might have once rivaled Earth's, with water rushing through the canyons and channels seen by Viking space probes. But now the channels are dry, and on the hottest day, the Martian air is still a chill 60 degrees. Our probes found no clear signs of life on the red planet, but of course, many people once believed that intellects vast, cool, and unsympathetic regarded this Earth with envious eyes and slowly and surely drew their plans against us.
Music is powerful, man. It speaks to a primal pit in our brains. It makes anyone want to get up and get their knees going. Gotta get them pumping, pumping, pumping. Boom, 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 boom.
To augment your means than to diminish your wants. If you are wise, you will do the same. You will do same time. Young or old, rich or poor, sick or well. If you are very wise, you will do both in the same way as to augment the general happiness of society.
What did you do last summer?
Well, last summer I worked. Worked in a radio station, mind you.
What did you do?
Well, I was only stenographer to the prize director, but it sounds good.
Gently, very light, very crisp, very easy to handle. It's the way Americans get themselves up for an American day.
Oh. did this audit at JPL and radio astronomy. It was unbelievable. I mean, can you imagine an extraterrestrial disc jockey like listening to radio waves from space?
And then I realized, like I was shot, with a diamond. A diamond bullet right through my forehead. And I thought, my God, the genius of that. The genius. The will to do that.
Those are monsters fighting a walking engine of glittering metal, striding towards the heavens, inside the pine trees in its path. A trick of the heavens were smacked on it. And another monstrous machine appeared, rushing at sea.
What do you do for recreation this summer?
Recreation? Well, I'll tell you. I kept my piano company. And at that, I didn't even get freshman standing.
I see. Where are you from?
Well, I'm from a little town called Rome. Rome, New York, not Rome, Italy. Although originally I came from Europe. I was born in Lithuania.
Thank you.
After that point, Mars, of course, is in front of us, and our job is to catch up with him again. Very gradually, we lessen the distance between us, but the judges and the sun do not see us in a straight line. In other words, we do not catch up with Mars until November 16, 1958. On the diagram, locate the Earth for that date, and you will see the position is marked, opposition November 16, 1958. Now we ask the judges, how long did it take us? And they look at their records and they reply, 797 days. But everybody knows that no two races are ever run exactly the same time. And so we must not conclude from this one contest that the Earth will always catch up with Mars in 797 days. We can even make a list of oppositions for a complete circuit around the Sun, and it would show how widely the times vary. I hope you'll ask why, because the explanation will show a surprising feature of the two racetracks that's shown in the diagram. First, we'll list a series of oppositions and the times between them. We'll start with the one that we used for the race that we've already watched and go on from there. It'll be like this. September the 10th, 1956 through November 16, 1958. Well, as I've said, that is 797 days. Then the next one to December the 30th, 1960, 775 days. Then to February the 4th, 1963, only 666 days. To March the 9th, 1965, 764 days. To April the 15th, 1967, 767 days. To May the 31st, 1969, 777 days. And then to August the 10th, 1971, 801 days. And so we see a minimum in that list of only 666 days between 1960 and 63, and a maximum of 801 days from 1969 to 1971. That gives an average for that particular cycle of about 2 years, 33 and a third days between oppositions. Furthermore, these times and these averages are not regular, and most textbooks call the long-term average about 2 years and 50 days between oppositions. Now, if you locate those dates on the diagram, you'll see that these oppositions are in different directions from the Sun. No two of them occur on the same date and in the same position in space. It has been estimated that an opposition will come at virtually the same position every 284 years. So we must find out why the intervals between oppositions are so irregular. And that means we must look at the diagram again. From ancient times to medieval days, astronomy was hopelessly mixed up with religious beliefs. And the very foundation of those beliefs was that the Earth was the supreme work of the Creator, and therefore the center and the ruling force of the universe. It was Copernicus who first dared publish the heretical belief that the Sun was the center and ruler of the solar system, that the planets, including the Earth, were captives of the Sun and revolved around it. But even Copernicus failed to question one belief, and that was that the perfect form of curve was the circle, that the Creator would not have a heavenly body move in anything but a perfect curve, and that therefore the planets must revolve in perfect circles around the Sun. It was Kepler, through his monumental work on the motions of Mars, who found that that old belief in circles was not true. He proved that the orbits of all planets are ellipses, and that the Sun is not in the center of the ellipses. Consequently, at one point in its orbit, the planet will be nearer the Sun than it will be when it's on the opposite point. Now, that nearest point is called perihelion, which means nearby helios, or the Sun. And the opposite point is aphelion, apo meaning away from, and helios, the god of the Sun in ancient Greek. Furthermore, Kepler proved that when a planet is at perihelion, nearest, its speed around its orbit is fastest, and when it's at aphelion, farthest, its speed is slowest. For any planet, one half of the distance from its perihelion to its aphelion is called its mean distance. Now look at the diagram. I've drawn a circle for the Earth for its mean distance, and another, a perfect circle, the light dashed line, for the mean distance of Mars. The black disks representing the Earth seem at first sight to indicate that it's always on that circle. But find its position for January 3 or 4. Notice that the black disk is inside the circle. Directly opposite, for July from 3 to 5, the disk is outside the circle. There are two places, April 3 or 4 and October 4 or 5, where the disk is exactly on the circle. The actual distances in space, compared to the real size of the Earth, are so great that they could not be represented to scale on a diagram that made the Earth big enough to be seen. It would have to be a dot so small as to be invisible. The real distances show that in July, it's about 1.5 million miles beyond the circle, and in January, 1.5 million miles inside. And in obedience to Kepler's laws, it is racing fastest in January when it's nearest, and slowest in July when it's most distant. And so the Earth's orbit is really an ellipse, although it is almost a circle. In the case of Mars, the departure from the circle is much more obvious, and its actual orbit is shown by the heavy dashed lines. You'll also find notations giving the speed of Mars at the four important points of its orbit. It's this constant change in the speeds and the distances of the Earth and Mars in different parts of their orbits that produce the great variations in the intervals between oppositions. The diagram also shows that when an opposition takes place in the last half of August or the first half of September, the two orbits are at their closest. At that time, the way Mars is tilted over turns its southern hemisphere toward us. And our astronomers, especially in our own southern hemisphere, can best study it in detail because of its nearness. Unfortunately for our view of the northern part of Mars, that hemisphere leans toward us in the opposite part of its orbit, in the direction the Earth reaches in February and March. And then the red planet is some 27 million miles farther away from us than in the August and September oppositions. Of course, that difference in distance can make a big difference in the details that can be seen from the Earth. If you're interested in the various distances and other data involved in these two orbits, you'll find everything of importance on the diagram. And then later on, I'd like to talk some more about Mars, but next time we'll see what the astronomers have to tell us about the two remarkable little moons that revolve around Mars, and about the fascinating things that we do not know, such as those canals and the vegetation question, and the atmosphere, and of course the chance of finding any intelligent life on Mars when we finally land there to explore it. So that will be the next talk. Goodbye now.
Testing. 1, 2, 3.
Marched off in the direction of London.
I'm standing in the center of a large semicircular room, the observatory at Princeton. It was pitch dark in here until a split began to open in the dome, which has let in a sprinkling of stars that are casting a kind of frosty glow over this whole intricate mechanism of the 24-inch refracting telescope. The motors that you hear occasionally are pointing and focusing the scope. Professor Richard Pearson is standing directly above us on a small platform, peering through the giant lens. Now, besides his ceaseless watch of the heavens tonight, Professor Pearson is in constant touch with other astronomers worldwide through the Office of Astronomical Telegrams. Professor, may we begin our questions?
At any time, Mr. Phillips.
Sir, can you tell me exactly what you see as you observe the planet Mars through your telescope?
Nothing unusual at the moment, Mr. Phillips. A rusty orange disk swimming in a black sea, dark bands across the disk. Quite distinct now, because Mars happens to be in opposition.
Meaning it's at the point nearest the Earth?
Yes.
Now, in your opinion, Professor Pearson, what do those dark bands signify?
Not canals, I can assure you, Mr. Phillips, although that has been the popular conjecture of those who imagine Mars to be inhabited. From a scientific viewpoint, the stripes are merely the result of geological differences peculiar to the planet.
So you are quite convinced, as a scientist, that living intelligence as we know it does not exist on Mars?
I should say the chances against it are millions to one.
And yet how do you account for those gas eruptions which are occurring on the surface of the planet at such regular intervals?
Mr. Phillips, I cannot account for it.
Could you refresh our memories as to how far Mars is from the Earth?
Approximately 45 million miles.
That seems a safe enough distance.
Excuse me, Dr. Pearson?
Yes?
I think you should see this.
A message has just been handed to astronomer Richard Pearson here at the observatory at Princeton, New Jersey. Dr. Pearson is reading that message.
Philip?
He's handed it to us. May we read this on the air?
Sure.
It's a message from Dr. Lloyd Gray at the Columbia Geophysical Observatory, and it reads, 9:15 Eastern Standard Time, seismograph registered a shock measured at 3.5 on the Richter scale, centered about 20 miles from Princeton. Can you investigate? Now, Professor Pearson, could this occurrence have anything to do with the disturbances on the planet Mars?
Hard. This is probably a meteorite of unusual size, and its arrival at this particular time is merely a coincidence. However, I certainly will conduct a search.
And may we join you on that search?
Well, if you don't mind tramping around in the middle of the night.
I think we're up to it if you are.
All right. Let's go.
We'll be following this story for you in Princeton, New Jersey. This is Carl Phillips.
You're listening to Public Radio News in Washington. Two more reports on the unusual explosions on the planet Mars. In Montreal, Canada, John Morse of Macmillan University has seen... is it three explosions, Professor?
Yes, three. Between the hours of 7:45 p.m. and 9:20 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Well, that pretty much confirms the earlier reports from American observatories.
I would think so, yes.
Have you heard, sir, of the impact of a huge flaming object believed to be a meteorite on a farm in the neighborhood of Grover's Mill, New Jersey?
That is news to me.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you.
The flash in the sky from that meteorite was visible for several hundred miles along the eastern seaboard. New Jersey State Trooper Captain Henry Quinlan has been besieged with calls.
In Trenton here, our office has got hundreds. You could hear the noise as far north as Elizabeth. That was about 8:50 tonight.
Just where is Grover's Mill, Captain?
It's about 22 miles from Trenton.
Grover's Mill is even closer to Princeton.
Fifth anniversary space note number one, coming in 3, 2, 1.
This is a NASA 25th anniversary space note. Explorer, X-15, Apollo, Echo, Challenger, Pioneer, Voyager, Mercury, Viking, Skylab. Only a fraction of the names which have made history during America's first 25 years in space. Since October 1st, 1958, hundreds of automated satellites have been sent aloft to carry out scientific and practical missions. Literally dozens of astronauts have flown into Earth orbit to do useful work, and a dozen more have explored the surface of the moon. Two-thirds of the planets in the solar system have been examined in detail.
Testing. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Testing. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Thank you. manipulate space and time. They have that technology. They can be from anywhere or nowhere, any time or no time. So to suggest they are merely extraterrestrial, I think, is the larger picture, which I hope these is going to come and turn out to be far more wondrous than we can imagine.
Survey team, I couldn't waste my time on it.
Exactly halfway over the edge.
Then my exec saw this junkyard through the telescope. We landed, took a look at a load of alien machine parts discarded by some other spaceship, and then prepared to take off for Earth. It had all been a waste of time.
Engine room, MacGyver.
It's Commander Warren. All secure?
Yes, sir.
Very well. Countdown for blastoff.
Adventures in which you'll live in a million could be years on a thousand maybe worlds.
Engine room ready, sir.
Adventures in which you'll live in a million could be years on a thousand maybe worlds.
X minus 5. Minus 4. Minus 3. Minus 2. Minus 1.
Engine room. Engine room. What's going on down there? Engine room. Engine room. Engine room! What's going on down there? Engine room! Engine room! Engine room! What's going on down there?
Fire.
Engine room. Engine room. Engine room. What's going on down there?
Mac, what's wrong down there?
Engine room. Engine room. Engine room.
Brady, get the data analyzer ready.
Engine room. Engine room. What's going on down there?
We'll have to correct for a new takeoff top.
Engine room.
And it's the first time I ever heard of engine failure before takeoff.
What's going on down there?
Better before than after.
Engine room?
Yes, sir.
What's happening? Your boys ready yet?
Engine room. Engine room.
Copy the weather, man. God, I haven't said that in nearly 10 years.
Think that our democracy, shaky as it may be at the moment, can stand a long string of revelations showing that our own government has not acted in a constitutional manner? Can our democracy stand that strain?
Yes.